Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host. A little bit different show today. We're coming to you from either the Mosel or the Moselle River, depending on if you're German or French. And we're on the Catholic Answers cruise. We're on the Catholic Answers pilgrimage down the Rhine. We've already seen some of the holiest places in Europe, including Aachen and Cologne. Yeah, the cathedral at Cologne. And I've got my flannel panel pals with me today. Chris Cech, president of Catholic Answers. Hello, Chris Cech.
Thanks for having me, Cy.
Oh, you're always welcome here on my ship, Chris. Glad to have you. And you know what? Maybe you and I should change seats because you guys are going to have to go ahead and switch over there.
This is the first time this ship has been on the Moselle. This is the first time the Ama Siena has sailed the Moselle because of us, because we chose this. We chose this route.
That's right. The Moselle with this ship this morning. This morning, getting coffee, I looked out at the Moselle, and it's just so beautiful here. And I had this feeling, it can't get any more beautiful than this. And a white swan came swimming across right in front of me. I was like, I guess it can. So, the Lord's like, oh, really? You think that's good? White swan. Also with us, Joe Heschmeyer, apologist at Catholic Answers, author of a whole bunch of books, including The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe Heschmeyer.
Thank you. It's good to be live streaming with you.
Because we're going down live stream.
Okay. You do not have to fake laughter at any of this stuff. Okay. That was generous of you, but you don't have to do that. A lot of Joe's jokes take thought. And then once you think them through, they're just not worth the time. So
they take thought on the receivers and they don't take thought on the producers.
Yeah, right. So what we do on the final panel, we discuss the news of the world. And I have asked people, and unfortunately, we won't be able to take questions from in the room today. And I do apologize for that. It's been an extraordinary cruise, I think. It's just been wonderful. I wonder if anything stands out that you guys want to mention. You know what? Let's do this. Just name your favorite pilgrim, your favorite person who came on the cruise with us. Just look out across the
Missy Kellett.
Oh, that's there you go. Try to beat that, Chris.
It's Siobhan Cruz Kelly.
Okay, there we go. Yay.
Cruz is her middle name.
Right.
One thing that I'm very impressed with is among these pilgrims, a lot of people who have important professional positions and married and kids and all that, but quite a few people who are catechists or do various ministries of all different kinds. And several of the catechists I spoke with said it in their parish, OCIA, which used to be, of course, as we all know, RCIA, but
what was it before that?
But they said it was bigger last year than they had seen before, and this year was bigger than last year. So I'm going to give you the mic, Chris. I want to ask you guys what you make of that. Do you think that there is, it feels like something's happening. That's what people are saying. It feels like something positive is happening. I wonder if you have that, if you share that feeling, and then I will ask you where you think Catholic Answers fits into all of that.
Oh, sure. Okay. I guess I can go. I thought you said
that has never happened before.
I thought you specified Chris, but I'll go.
Well, you devoted a podcast to this.
I've devoted a couple podcasts to this, and I can actually give you a little bit of the numbers. There's a statistician by the name of Ryan Burge, and he's looked at some of this data, and he's actually a Protestant pastor and statistician, or former Protestant pastor and statistician. So he's been very interested in kind of drilling into these numbers. And historically, I mean, in the recent past, Catholicism has been doing just terribly. I mean, I don't think I'm telling you guys anything when we say there was a huge exodus from Catholic churches in the latter half of the 20th century. And the number of ex-Catholics to Catholic converts is really staggering. It's like 6.5 or 7 to 1. So that's the bad news. The good news is, in the last 5 years, something really remarkable has been happening. And we can see this in the data. You have the number of conversions going up, the number of people getting confirmed, the number of adults being baptized. All of these kind of metrics show that there had been this very broad decline of religion generally, and Catholicism specifically, that then sort of stopped. And it wasn't an immediate resurgence. It wasn't an immediate, now everyone is getting baptized and coming back to the church. But the exodus sort of tapered off, and then it sort of flatlined, which was great. I mean, if you go from losing money to breaking even, that's an improvement. Now, obviously, you want to do even better than that, but this is certainly a step in the right direction. But I just saw some data the last few days where they did a study, I want to say it was 6,000 people, where they started following them in 2021. And so they kept track of these people over the course of the last 5 years. And there were about twice as many Protestants as Catholics. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but there were within one person an equivalent number of Protestants who'd become Catholic to Catholics who'd become Protestant. And that is completely unprecedented in terms of the last several decades. And in fact, given that there were twice as many Protestants to start, the Catholic side was actually doing about 2-to-1 as well. The Catholic retention rate during that period was 91%, which was higher than Protestantism, higher than non-Christian religion, and much higher actually than even like the nuns and the atheists. So something is happening where we are seeing two things: a greater resilience within Catholicism, where people aren't leaving like they were before, and a greater attractiveness to Catholicism, where people are starting to come into the Catholic Church in startlingly higher numbers.
Yeah, and that's something that's happening, Cy, that I've been especially thinking about, well, I don't know, for several years now. Fulton Sheen, working off of St. Augustine, talks about the God-shaped hole in all of our hearts. And we've been very good for a long time, especially in America, with filling that hole with all kinds of other things, though not really filling it, but, you know, anesthetizing ourselves or distracting ourselves. And some of that stuff is starting to wear out. We're realizing, okay, well, actually, I cannot fill this hole in this way. I've been sold a bill of goods. I look around the world. Maybe the economy isn't doing so well. There's a great deal of killing that's going on around the world. And so this restlessness and this concern of mine, this unease that I have, isn't going away. And in fact, it's growing. It's expanding. The God-shaped hole is expanding, and I'm not filling it. At the same time, something has happened, and this, I think, is to the second part of your question, Cy, with respect to Catholic answers, or broadly Catholic apostolates generally. The internet, which is a source of or a medium for all kinds of wickednesses, is also a medium for the truth. And in the last whenever since Carl Keating had the brilliance to get the URL, Catholic.com. But I think even more recently than that, with the expansion of social media and, like, the, for example, the podcast that Joe and Trent are doing, Catholic Answers Live, more and more people are able to find the truth if they are willing to put the time in. And frankly, it doesn't take a lot of effort. There are a lot of, there's a great deal of misinformation, but we're finding more and more that the work of organizations such as Catholic Answers or Word on Fire, this stuff is rising to the top, and it is becoming increasingly accessible. And where once perhaps you were, you know, a Baptist in Mobile, Alabama, and kind of in the thrall of your pastor, and he could say to you, oh yeah, well, Catholics are cannibals, or they do worship statues. All that is investigatable, and you can determine the truth of it or not. I keep coming back to this Jeremy Christensen, who was on the show, who wrote the book about his conversion from Mormonism, and he said the worst thing that ever happened to Mormonism was the internet, because anyone who wanted to look up the really fantastic claims of the Mormon Church, anthropological, archaeological, linguistic, historical, can find out that they're just invented out of whole cloth. Now, Sola Scriptura, that takes a little more to dig into. Sola Fide, maybe even a little bit more than that. But the answers are there because of the work of the great apologists at Catholic Answers and now many others. I mean, I think Catholic Answers were the first out of the gate almost 50 years ago. But the information is available, and that has had a huge part in inspiring, especially, I think, the young people who so much are getting this information online.
What, one of the things that you hear is, well, they're attracted to the Latin Mass, or they're attracted to the traditional liturgy, or do you give that credence? Is that true? Where do you put that?
People want something to stand for. You know, if you look at the numbers, as I was saying before, we really see a marked shift in the last 5 years. Year over year, I think there was one exception, but every year, like, the number of people in RCIA has gone up, the number of people coming into the church has gone up. So there was something of a nadir, like a low point in 2021. And this marked kind of an epochal turn. And so you think about what happened in 2021. Now, you might say they hired Joe Heschmeyer, Catholic Answers. I think that might
that
not
turned it that all around. Be the, finally, it got turned around.
That might not be the actual cause. I think the actual cause might have been COVID era search for meaning.
Yeah.
That we were in a place where it was like the best lacked all conviction and the worst were full of passionate intensity. And so to have a sane presentation that is like strong and full-throated and a thing that you can actually stand on and live in is something people are happy with. And we see this certainly with the Latin Mass, but just in general, traditional religion is on the rise, whereas like the more liberal or worldly forms of Protestantism have plummeted. The, you know, a generation ago, the claim was that if the church wanted to survive, we had to kind of accommodate the world and become more like Anglicanism. Well, Anglicanism is the third most practiced religion in England behind Catholicism and Islam. I mean, it can't survive on its own terms. And so if you compromise with the world, what you end up with is just the world. Because if all you're preaching is the same thing I would get if I sleep in on Sunday, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to sleep in on Sunday. So we have to make these big claims. We also have to have a way of living. Like having the big claims and having something you stand for is a good start, but it's a thing that you live in. It can't just be a thing that you kind of play around with online if it's going to have any legs.
I'm glad you asked that question, Cy, especially about the traditional Latin Mass, because it's an opportunity to call for us to remember that it isn't truth alone that people are looking for because of this want that they have, but also goodness and beauty, right? And if it's true, if it's good, if it's beautiful, it belongs to the Catholic Church. It's ours. And this, I think, especially is the draw of the traditional liturgy and its beauty, and the beauty of the music that attaches to it, and typically the architecture. And of course, look at the Cologne Cathedral where we just were, that was inspired by it.
Yeah, but you look at the Cologne Cathedral, or you look at the typical Southern California church that was built in the 70s or 80s, and it's an entirely different. I do think there's a failure to treat the human person as both physical and spiritual, and so we forgot. I feel like in the modern era we forgot as a church that the person, you know, that 43-meter high vault in Chartres Cathedral, or no, in Cologne Cathedral. By the way, I still don't know what 43 meters is. They say like it's that. It's whatever
lot.
That is.
Yeah,
like,
it's a lot.
But that is not just some impressive architectural feat. That's to lift the heart, and we dropped that. And so here's my concern is, even if we have a wave now of 20-somethings and 30-somethings who say, I want the Catholic faith, do we have a church that can welcome them and sustain them and give them what they're looking for? Or do we need to become the church that can welcome them and sustain them and give them what they're looking for?
I think it's both. I think that we see in the numbers, in addition to all the things we talked about in terms of retention and in terms of, you know, people coming into the church, you look at the ordination numbers and we see really marked shifts. If you look at every five-year cohort, every cohort has gotten more traditional and more conservative than the one before it, which is, frankly, a double-edged sword, because there are times where someone who is over indebted to the political right might have blind spots in the same way someone who's over indebted to the political left will. Definitely. But there does seem to be that same hunger for something deeper and stickier, you might say, in terms of just having a religion that you can live. But we do have this problem that architecturally, we often have these banal parishes. We, in many cases, have parishes that are very large, where you giant parking lot, large kind of uninspiring space. And even if you get a great pastor, and even if you get a whole crop of people who are on fire for the faith, it can be a little bit of an uphill battle if you also have a lot of people who are just checking the box on Sunday. Now, I think there are ways, short of a full-on parish renovation, that you can accommodate that. And I think we look to the history of the church for that, that you gather people in intentional spaces and you allow the people who are really fervent and the people who want to be fervent to encounter one another and to grow in fervor. And so this was, you know, the monastery, this can also be a men's group. This can also be, you know, some kind of prayer group in your home. This can be, you don't, even if your pastor is not on board, even if your pastor doesn't have the vision, you can invite a few other people over for a time for prayer and a meal or something like this. And you can build up these spaces much more organically than people imagine.
I'm really glad that Joe brought up the monastery there, because that actually is the ideal. Monastic vocation is the highest of the vocations. But in all of our lives, in our vocations, the more we emulate that monastic ideal of common life, of common prayer, of common work, common enterprise, right? Then the more we're going to have success, to answer your question, with all the new folks coming in. If I had to summarize the papacy of Benedict XVI or his message, he constantly reminded us that man is made for two things: worship of the divine and human friendship. And it's this human friendship, I think, where actually there probably is a good bit more work for us to do, and I think actually some things that we can learn from our separated brethren in this regard. Having not had a liturgy for 500 years, they've leaned into the human friendship aspect of it. And I don't mean we should start putting coffee shops in our narthexes. That's a dumb idea. But
let me check that off my list.
Yeah. Okay. But more and more additional activities of formation, of social time, of learning in our parishes. I'll name one guy, Father Spencer Howe in Minneapolis. I can't remember the name of his parish. It's my son's parish, and there are constant. He's also the chaplain of the Gilbert Keith Chesterton Society. There are musical events. There are speakers that are brought in. There's social time, and he's intentional, as the Utes say. He's intentional about this, and he's a model for pastors who want to know how to retain the young people they're bringing in.
I mean, I think one of the issues you sort of tapped into this is that we don't have the intentional space for community within the liturgy. So we, and this is by design.
It's not what the liturgy is for.
Right, that's not what the liturgy is for. Parishes that try to artificially do that, you'll stand up and say hello to the person next to you. That is, stop it. Stop doing that.
Yep. Right now.
But having said that, there is a, like, they're identifying a real need. They just are feeling it very badly. And so it's better to put on parish events or for people in the parish just to be human and to say hello. Like, even if you're there with your family, it's fine to say good morning to the people you don't recognize. You don't have to treat your co-religionist as some kind of hostile intrusion of your Sunday worship. You can treat them as someone made in the image of God. And who knows, maybe it's someone visiting for the first time, and that will make the difference. Because frequently people do talk about the lack of community. I've spoken, obviously, as you can imagine, you know, working for Catholic Answers, we talk to a lot of converts to Catholicism. And people who come from an evangelical background often bemoan that missing community. That when they were at a small church of maybe, you know, 100 people, everybody knew each other and they would go and spend time with each other and they would check in. They knew what was going on in each other's lives. Then they joined this Catholic parish with, you know, 2,500 families and they're anonymous. No one checks in on them. and that can be very lonely. And so the good news is, for everyone listening, it doesn't matter if you're some whiz at apologetics, you can do that part. You can be friendly to people, you can invite them over. Worst case scenario, they just think you're slightly weird, and no harm, no foul, it'll be to your good on judgment day. That maybe the suffering you endure isn't martyrdom, it's making a fool of yourself by being friendly. That's great. And it may, on a positive note, be life-changing. You know, Rodney Stark, the sociologist, when he looked at the rise of Christianity, a lot of it was not Christians were winning these really in-depth theological arguments. It was that they had this culture of invitation and friendship and community, and people were hungry for that. Well, as I alluded to this earlier, we have this post-COVID crisis of meaning and belonging, and you see it really profoundly among young people. People are hungry to belong to something. One of the major drivers right now is marriage. People are getting married to a Catholic and they become Catholic. And it's easy to sort of look down your nose at that. But frequently, those people become very sincere, devout Catholics, even if it's not the kind of highbrow road you might have imagined that they were going to take entering into the church.
Yeah, Joe said exactly what I wanted to say, which gives me a lot of confidence about how my brain works. But I can just, if I can just
under your brain works.
If I could just actually underscore this and maybe even accelerate it as something of a challenge for everyone here and everyone listening, you really can't do a great deal about whether the liturgy is offered well or not at your parish. I mean, you can have a conversation with your pastor in charity or volunteer to be in the choir or something like that. But something every single person in this room can do is work to increase the level of an activity of friendship in his or her parish.
I'm particularly fascinated by what you said, Chris, about we can learn from our...
Oh, wait. I was more fascinating than Joe?
I thought you were way more fascinating than Joe. And more flannel as well. But because I hadn't thought
He's
about that.
He's got Czech in his name. Again, I don't know the difference between flannel and plaid, but I assume that makes sense.
All of this gets edited out, so don't worry about it. It does seem to me that there was a time in the church where they didn't go, how are we going to build community in this parish? Because the parish was physically in the middle of the community.
And actually, if I may, the parish the parish is not just the church. Canonically, to talk about the parish as the church would be like talking about the diocese as the cathedral. Like, it's a misunderstanding of the term. The parish is that block of the diocese. It's like your neighborhood. And so the parish church is the hub of that.
Yeah, geographically described.
Right. And so whether you go to your parish church or not, you are part of your parish because it just means you're part of your neighborhood. And so if you think about it that way, then one of the ways you build up the parish is just build up the neighborhood. Because that's literally what a parish is.
But the physical presence of the church, for example, in these little German towns that we go by, the church is the architectural and physical heart of many of these places. These immigrants come to the United States, and it's the same way. You know, we used to live in Dorchester in Massachusetts. In Dorchester, people go, where do you live? And they tell you the name of the parish they live in. Oh, I live over at St. Anne's. I'm over in St. Peter's, because the church defines the spot. Well, after the Second World War, everybody moved out to Levittown, which has no geographic or architectural center. It has none of that. Then later, people invented a geographical and architectural heart for the suburbs, and it was called a mall. Yeah. And there was no place for two things were missing from the mall. The church was not there, and humanity. And so those two things were missing. And I think that's part of why malls are dying. But I feel like there is a problem that the church has not solved. And it is the problem of what is the role of the parish in the suburbs. And I feel like both of you got to that. I would like to add, I think that what I see with like Scott Wieman, with Catholic in Recovery, and with some of these other ministries that are coming is, you know, of the threefold ministry of the Lord, healing is one of the threefold things. And we as a Catholic church, we outsourced healing to the hospital and to the urgent care center or to the AA group, which is, you know, non-sectarian. But we need to have healing ministries. We need to, and you know who's getting really good at this in suburban parishes is the grief ministry. The ministry like Crossroads Ministry in some places out of Pittsburgh. where, you know, people can not just get help with the funeral arrangements, but can grieve together, can heal together. So it does seem to me that while I'm not discounting any of what you said, I think we need to become a social place again. Amen. But we've forgotten we're not doing the ministries that Christ himself did. If we would, I think there's a whole bunch of people that need the healing of Jesus Christ, and they'll come.
Well, I'm in agreement.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's well said.
Okay, I won flannel panel. Thank you all for coming.
Well, can I just say that geography is part of this.
Right.
The automobile has been extremely disruptive toward what you are describing.
Right. But
and,
you're...
And now also the fact that liturgies are so varied in their quality means that, for example, the Latin Mass parish typically becomes a commuter parish, where people who really want a beautiful liturgy are now driving as much as an hour or more each way in order to have a beautiful liturgy. But if your community, to the point that you raised, building it, a community is not something that you drive to.
Who was Jesus? It's the most important question in the world. Was he a great teacher? A religious myth? The Messiah and Lord? In Evidence for Christ, apologist Jimmy Akin builds a powerful step-by-step case from history, scripture, and reason, showing that Jesus is the fulfillment of prophecy and the risen Lord. Get your copy of Jimmy Akin's Evidence for Christ today at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world. But it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Why do we baptize? Does it really do anything? In Baptism Now Saves You, Dr. Carlo Broussard explains the unbreakable relationship between baptism and salvation, making sense of the church's teachings in a way that is easy to understand and ready to share. St. Peter said, "Repent and be baptized, every one of you." Discover what that means today. Order your copy of Baptism Now Saves You at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Community is not something that you drive to. It's hard.
Yeah, there's a Catholic that all three of us know who was driving to a Latin Mass parish about an hour away, and he had a realization that this was not actually good for his family because they couldn't invest in the other families there. And so they were wanting beautiful liturgy for their kids as well as for the worship of God. But then they realized, like, well, we meet these great families, but we're never going to have a play date if we're driving, an hour or more. So being able to find somewhere where maybe it's not everything you want, it's not your kind of Goldilocks liturgical experience, but you can say this is good enough to fight for, and this is good enough to try to build from, that there's real good to be had there.
Yeah, and actually taking the long view. I mean, if you are able to be part of a parish that over time builds genuine human friendship, and then marriages come out of that, children come out of those, and faithful marriages, vocations. This is still generations and well, till the end of time. But this kind of work that needs to be done in the restoration we're describing it's the long game.
It's easy and hard. I know, because this is a group of three men, that you probably want to hear our thoughts about how, if you're a stay-at-home mom, you ought to do this.
I've thought a lot about that.
So yes. In all seriousness, my wife has some friends who do this very well, and they make it look effortless. And the way they do it is they'll bring pastries or bagels, and they'll come over and knock on the door. And they come bearing gifts, and so you're more than happy to let them in. There's no expectation for the house to be clean because they've ambushed you, but they've ambushed you with a happy surprise because they've got bagels. And oftentimes they have a small child in tow because it's the kids who aren't yet school age. And so then my wife and my two-year-old and, you know, her friend and her friend's two-year-old can just have a pleasant morning together and, you know, have coffee and conversation, and there's community. And so if we were to stop going to mass, they would be the first people to notice. They would, you know, if we had something going on, these would be the first people to check in on us and see what was happening. That kind of community is invaluable. Like, we have lost innumerable people because they've simply slipped away and no one was checking in on them. And there's a tragedy there that is a very avoidable tragedy, and not a tragedy that needs the fixing of the world or even the bishop or the pastor on board. It just is you being a little more intentional and maybe a little more outside of your comfort zone.
I have to say, maybe we should move on to the part where we all give Pope Leo advice, because I'm going to give Pope Leo advice right now. The part we've all been looking for, where we say what Pope Leo should be doing. But I do have the feeling that there's a very good reason why we had the rise of the celebrity papacy. I'm not at all speaking against Pope John Paul or any of the other celebrity popes we've had. But the fundamental problem with the Catholic Church is at the parish level. And we need a pope who will fix the parish. And I feel like if I were advising Pope Leo, he listens every day.
He doesn't watch the show.
He does, yeah. But it would be attend to the parishes of Rome and start making a model of how the parish can be reformed and fixed. Because for 99% of the earth, the only place that they're going to encounter the church that Jesus Christ founded is the parish. And I'm sure that there is a good reason for these giant synods and all these things that we do, and the constant outpouring of words from the Vatican and from the USCCB. And I realize that I'm sounding critical now just because I hate all of this stuff. But but when will somebody make the parish the priority? Because it's obvious we have them all over the world. If they were in shape, the church would be in shape. Yeah. All this other stuff will work out if you get the parishes healthy.
Yeah, and I would just add that includes the parish school.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, there we go. A little hand for the parish school.
Oh!
Well, that was very bold of me to advise Pope Leo, but he asked. So he was like, "Si, when you do the show, would you get some advice for me?" But I don't know. I'll give you a chance. Do you have any advice for Pope Leo?
I don't have great advice for Pope Leo. I think he has a lot on his plate. But I would say, again, we don't need Pope Leo to fix the parish. You can fix your parish. Like, the idea, you know, sometimes
So, Joe, your point is we don't need a pope, is what you're saying. Okay, let's get that on.
Very, very
that out
close
for social media. We don't need Pope Leo.
So
what
often,
you said.
As Catholics, we want to basically say, the pope needs to fix this problem. It's like, man, my car is very messy. We should, you know, have the Pope fix this. And it's like, maybe there's a more immediate, you know, subsidiarity level. Some of these problems are well within our scope. And if we have healthy, vibrant parishes, this also is a model. Because there's a hunger. There's a hunger from a lot of bishops, and I'm sure the Pope is on this list, who would love to see parishes be more vibrant, who would love to see a revitalization. And the problem is the kind of community model you were talking about before, where people lived and died in a little parish, in a neighborhood, in a ghetto, that is over and done with. And that is over and done with in ways that are irreversible. We can't simply create a situation where people are going to have a livable job that they work in their same parish boundaries. And so people are used to driving. I mean, just think about your own commute. Just if those of you who are listening in the car or whatever, imagine how many parish boundaries you drive through simply on the way to work every day. That is radically different than your grandparents' life. And we are still trying to figure out how to accommodate that so that parishes can be a place where it doesn't just become these weird echo chambers where, you know, people who are this way go to that parish and people who are this other way go to... That's actually not healthy for the church. That's not healthy for the unity of the church. But how do we make the parish where it's a place where everyone who wants to do the Catholic thing is welcome in, and it's vibrant and it's alive and it's functioning the way it's meant to function. We're navigating a lot of that for the first time in ways that we've never had to face before.
If the Holy Father were to encourage his bishops and his priests to renew their commitment to parish schools, that would be valuable. Is anyone here from the Diocese of Wichita, Kansas? No one? In Wichita, Kansas, if you tithe, your kids go to school for free from kindergarten to your senior year of high school. And they're, I won't say very sophisticated, but they're a little sophisticated in how they determine that people are tithing. But this has been working in Wichita, Kansas now for several, well, for a couple of generations. It's been going on for a while, and it's been very, very successful. Wichita, Kansas is a place where, in fact, parishes are being built, not closed, and schools are being built. Also, many of the parishes in Wichita, Kansas have perpetual adoration chapels, but the leaning in on the parish school, which, apart from the fact that education is a central responsibility of the church, I mean, the church invented modern education. The other reality is that that school becomes a center for friendship, especially among the younger families.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mentioned before, this is friendships we have. Almost all of our existing friend group is either through the parish or the Catholic Montessori that our kids go to. And you can see the impact it has, not just on the kids, but on the parents as well. And at this Catholic Montessori, there are a handful of Protestant families, and one or two of them, I suspect, will be becoming Catholic in the next couple of years because of the influence of families and parents and friends. It's a very doable and workable model. One piece, I know we've mentioned this before, we don't have to belabor it, but you can also have good legislation where you have things like tax credits and such to support private schools. That can make the school model a lot more effective, where it can reach more people. Because if the school is unaffordably expensive, that really hinders its reach.
Sure.
But I know states like Missouri and Ohio and others have come up with models that work very well, and they seem to be spreading across the country.
Probably a good time to mention that the contribution that women religious made to the parish life. I mean, we lost something of unbelievable value when we lost the great communities of women religious that we had. And I remember we sent our kids to the parish school, and a nun came who was a missionary. You know, it was probably October, and you know, she came and talked to the kids about the missions. And one of my daughters said to me, like, "What's a nun?" And I realized, oh my gosh, I just took for granted. Like, it didn't even occur to me. I have to teach them what a nun is because they'd never seen one, and they go to the parish school. And so we. It does, you know, that thing that you said about the monasteries, the convents, we need, this is the thing I think the church is missing out on in part, is that there are millions of young people who would be really, really happy in a monastery or in the convent, like really happy, not that they are made for that. And we're somehow not helping them to get there. But women religious were the engine of so much of church life. I mean, how many marriages owe their longevity to the fact that the sisters were there ministering and just doing the things that help people get through life and make it possible for people to bear the really hard things you have to bear in the world? And it's not there anymore.
If you want to test size theory, take a trip to Gower, Missouri, there to the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of Apostles. Those women are suffused with joy. They are so full of joy. I remember a couple of years ago being in Rome and paying a visit with our friend Father Martin Maleski, who's a Jesuit priest there in Rome, who says Mass for the Missionaries of Charity there at the base of the Caelian Hill. My goodness, you just walk in there and you're completely overwhelmed by the joy of the place. They're very, very happy people.
I remember going to a Carmelite monastery where I had to talk to the sisters between us. I was interviewing them for a job I had at the time, and it was a screen. You had to talk to them through the screen. But from behind the screen, I could feel this joy emanating from these women. And you don't want to romanticize it because they have problems too, and they have difficulties. I remember asking Abbot Claude at the Benedictine Abbey one time, what's the hardest part about living in community? He had lived in community about 70 years at that time, and he said, the community. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, he's like, you know how hard it is to live with your wife? And I was like, it's super easy.
For those listening, no, she is staring at him.
She's sitting right here. Look at that. But he's like, well, you know, I live with, you know, a bunch of irascible men, and I have for, you know, or, you know, that. So I don't want to romanticize it, but it is a happy life. And I think we have somehow we've neglected to draw women, especially young women, back into that life where I think many of them could be very, very happy.
We are on a rebuilding project. Yeah. You know, the fact that your kids could go to Catholic school and not know what a nun was would have been unthinkable for any generation for the 1,000 years prior to the generation you were raising your kids. And so we are seeing the first trickle of a revival. And there's a sort of self-perpetuating quality to it, because when young girls see young women who are happy and living in this vocation and they're where they're meant to be, that's contagious. Mm-hmm. And it becomes this sort of cycle. And then they are more likely to, you know, the number of young people who missed their vocational calling because they just weren't even exposed to monastic life or, you know, the life of the religious life in general. We are slowly healing that partly just by showing.
Yeah. And by the way, we all have a role to play here. Most of us are not going to join the religious life, but every single one of us here and listening can support them. And so take the time, do the research, find out which of them are doing really good work, which one have growing vocations. I think of our friends, the Alhambra Carmelites. Yeah. So, who do superb retreat work up there in Los Angeles, Sisters of Life. You mentioned the Nashville Dominicans, which are now growing and staffing more and more schools. Benedictines of Mary, Queen of Apostles, I mentioned there, and there are the Norbertine Sisters. There are many, and all of them, pick the one you want or the 10 that you want and support them. Be generous.
However, yes, you can applaud. Be generous to the nuns. Yes, you can applaud that, but I know some of you have given money to nuns that asked, and within a week you had 40 other orders that sent you a letter, right? It's amazing. They just give it like, oh, here's one, and they just give it to all the other orders. And so
It's like Agatha Christie said, you give to one and then there were nuns.
I'm on medication for depression, so it does help me. But all right, in all of this revival,
our first segment, can we call it Perish or Perish? Nuns or none? I mean, we can keep doing this.
If you can do one for priest, for the word priest, I will give you a euro.
Father or farther? I don't know.
Does he get the euro or no? He said yes to that? Oh, my gosh.
Christine.
All right, you can go to the bathroom on me here in Europe one time.
You might want to refer that.
No, I didn't mean go to the bathroom on me. Oh, wait. I can't say this, can I? There's nothing I can do. All right.
We need to flush this one.
I am offering this up for women religious right now. Lord, this humiliation is for you. Good Lord, I don't think I can go on. I just have to leave now. I want to ask you both, look, we talk about this recovery of the church, and both of you did mention how the internet, and especially you, Chris, you mentioned that. Like Matt Frad is really big, and Father Mike Schmidt's really big, and I think there's a lot of young people that look at them and go, I want to do that, I want to be, and I think it's healthy, it's great. We have like Emily Dineny on our staff, who's a great, she's just really good at social media, and she's inviting other young people. She's got a great story. She's a twin, and her twin is secular, but she found the Catholic Church and came in, and they do a podcast together, the two of them, talking about, you know, why one is not in the church and why the other is going to heaven. And the, I said that wrong. I'm sorry. Sometimes I get that. But so all that good stuff is happening, but okay, so... And we can kind of go, hey, you know, and we do this. You know, Matt Frad started at Catholic Answers. Jason Everett started at Catholic Answers. Pat Madrid,
Matt,
you know,
Pinto.
Matt Pinto there. We could go on.
Mark Brumley.
But that doesn't say what we should do next. So I want to ask you all both, what's the next act for Catholic Answers in contributing to the revival of Catholic life?
Catholic Answers has something that most people don't have. So here's the thing. There are a lot of very young, talented, brilliant Catholics there with something to contribute, but it's very hard to establish yourself, partly because we have a very saturated media environment right now. The number of people who have good quality podcasts, YouTube channels, et cetera, that they're either currently working on or have good ideas for, who could be successful, the issue is it takes time. It takes a lot of experimentation, and you have to sort of strike it rich with the algorithm and all of these things that can make it tricky. So Catholic Answers has two things to offer in a very concrete way, because here's what we don't want. We don't want Catholic Answers to be Xerox. Like, Xerox was dominant in the 1980s, and they saw the personal computer come, and they knew that the personal computer was part of the future, but they just couldn't really pivot. They were too large and institutional, and their thing was printers, and so they treated PCs as this sort of interesting side thing, and it wiped them out. It destroyed them. They're a shadow of their former self. And you can think of any number of these instances that are like that. What we need to have is the strength to use our institutional longevity to allow for a pivot. And the example I would give from a business perspective is Nintendo. As I'm sure everyone knows, Nintendo started off as a trading card company. And yeah, in the 1890s.
I did not know that.
So Nintendo was a trading card company. They then dabbled with all sorts of things. They had taxis for a while. They had a chain of sketchy hotels. And then they eventually got into video
I'm waiting
games.
To hear how this ties to Catholic Answers, especially the sketchy.
But the idea is, like, you have the longevity that you can experiment with things. It's very hard for someone who's a broke 22-year-old to stick it out for 6 months on a project that they think will work if they just give it more time and effort. We have the ability to do that because of donors. And we are able to experiment with things that sometimes don't work, and then recover and move on to the things that do work. So we can try a bunch of different projects at once. That's something we can easily take for granted, but we are uniquely positioned to do that and then see what works in the future.
The other thing is that we have a team. We're not dependent on a particular apologist. Actually, I steal this analogy from my brother Joe Heschmeyer all the time. Catholic Answers is in many ways like Saturday Night Live. That show has been on for 50 years. We're coming up on 50 years ourselves. There have been seasons that have been particularly bright and some, you know, not especially bright. Actually, I think all the seasons of Catholic Answers have been great. But nonetheless, the comedy troupe, it's not the same people who were there 50 years ago. So there is something in the character of Catholic Answers that is transmitted from one generation to the next. And it's that voice of joy. It's that trustworthy voice. It's whimsical and engaging. And that's the other thing that, as Joe describes, the young man or young woman who's trying to make it on his or her YouTube channel also does not have. Can I manipulate the algorithms? That is part of it. But do I have someone who is older and wiser and more experienced than I am who's going to say, okay, there you're getting irascible, or there you got the doctrine wrong? Those kinds of things, as Tim Staples and Jimmy Akin provided guidance for Carlo and Joe and Trent, and now they in their turn for the next generation for whom we're searching right now. That's unique about our apostolate's eye.
I think it is, Chris. I do think there's the underlying thing is all those things you said, but there's this underlying thing too that I think we have inherited from the Tims and the Jimmys and the Matt Frads and Carl Keating, a certain standard that means people trust what we say. Yes. And that's why we have to be careful about what we say. And I wonder.
Yeah, I wish 15 minutes ago you had.
Yeah, that's right. Just to explain, many bathrooms in Europe cost €1. Oh, no, I don't want to go back to that. Okay. I like the papacy of Pope Francis was jarring. And he intended it to be jarring. So I'm not saying that to insult the Holy Father. It was jarring. And so we would get a lot of people saying, why aren't you taking a stand against this? Why aren't you getting involved in that? And I think sometimes people think because we're a media company that we're supposed to do all the things that media does, but we can't do those things because we will lose the one thing we can't lose, which is the trust that people have that we're just going to say Catholic stuff. We're not going to do other things. We're not going to get off on a tangent. We're just going to say Catholic stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. As Carl used to say, what the church teaches, no more, no less. And it sounds sort of reductionist, but in fact, it's not at all. It keeps us on mission.
Do you feel do people give you a pressure to, what do you get as far as this goes?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have opinions about Catholic Answers, but it's kind of like Chesterton's famous saying about the Catholic Church, where when you hear the same church being criticized for being too thin and too fat and too tall and too short, it's either the strangest looking thing or maybe some of these critiques are just wrong. Yeah. And so frequently when people complain about Catholic Answers, I'm not saying there aren't legitimate criticisms. Absolutely there are, especially of Trent. No, I'm just kidding.
Now we're getting good. Okay, go ahead.
No, in all seriousness, there are legitimate criticisms, but more often than not, whatever direction you think Catholic Answers is, too far to the left or the right or modern or traditional or whatever, that's more of a reflection of where you are rather than anything else, because we've got a diversity of voices that speak on a lot of topics, and we're not trying to stake out a little corner. We're trying to represent the church. We're trying to not just represent our own opinion about where the church could and should be on this or that issue. We're trying to do something much bigger than that. Now, sometimes we fall short of that. But
we do. And then what do we do when we fall short of that?
Two things. One, we own it. You know, we say, well, we shouldn't have said it that way. Two, we highlight other voices either within Catholic Answers or we have people on who can kind of approach the issue from a different perspective. And we want to show the areas where it's like, it's really important on this doctrine. We all agree. But then there's this other thing where it's, you know, here's this issue of how do we respond to this thing in the news. It's okay to have different opinions on that. And we try to model that, including here on this show. I mean, one of the things we're trying to do with Flannel Panel specifically is we're not just answering doctrinal questions. We're not just giving the black and white, this is what the catechism says, this is what the church has infallibly taught sort of answers. Some of these things, it's, we've got this problem in, you know, the lived experience of Catholic life. How do we navigate that? And there's likely to be as many answers to that as there are people.
Chris, anything about our future? Anything else?
It's bright.
Okay. All right.
Look, Cy, as long as the staff of Catholic Answers remains faithful to the Holy Spirit and realize that we are the conduits of His grace, how can I even predict all the magnificent things that are in store for us?
I will say one thing that I do appreciate about Catholic Answers. When I first came there, coming up on 10 years ago, there was that thing of everybody is in the chapel for 8:30 Mass, and then in the hallway after Mass, the arguments start about doctrine and, you know, how we deal with this. And it was great. It felt so energetic to have, we pray together, and then we get into the, and then of course, sometimes Tim and Carlo would start arguing about doctrine, and then everyone would just go to the other end of the building. Just leave them. We'll go to the other. This is not going to be good. This is going to take 2 hours, and it's going to be loud. So, but that vitality, I think, formed our apologists. So you think about a person like Carlo. Carlo's probably at like 12 years now or something. If you asked him, he would say that Jimmy refined him, Tim refined him, that the work refined him. So one of the things we've been able to do is be that training ground so that you can go out and be Matt Frad. And I don't know what Matt Frad took. And I really do admire Matt Frad. I think he's doing wonderful work. The interviews are fantastic. But that capacity to, now I see Carlo is doing that with these young apologists. And so you maybe hear some of these young apologists. I don't want to name them and embarrass them, but they're brilliant. They need polishing, that's all. They need to, and some of that polishing is to learn how to say things succinctly. Some of it is to learn how to say certain things charitably. Some of it is to learn how to not chicken out. Just, this is the doctrine of the church. You know, I know the world doesn't like it, we got your back. You say it, and don't have any fear about that. But I think that's one of the things that's part that has to be part of our future is developing the next generation of people who can do this. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. We're coming to you live from the Ama Siena ship on the Moselle River on our European pilgrimage up the Rhine River. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live right after this.